Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
The pandemic has been hard on all our kids. New studies show more than 1 in 3 children who started school in the pandemic now need intensive reading help. That's right. Millions of kids in kindergarten through third grade in the United States cannot read at grade level. Here's the good news. Your child can be reading in just 30 days, guaranteed, with Hooked on Phonics. Even if your child has been struggling, Hooked on Phonics will teach your child to read in just 30 days, guaranteed. And right now, you can get started for just $1. Text the word GRADE to 323232 right now. Hooked on Phonics is highly effective and incredibly fun, and everything can be done right from home and in less than 20 minutes a day. For more than 30 years, Hooked on Phonics has been the proven learn-to-read program that kids love to use. Text GRADE to 323232 and teach your child to read in just 30 days, guaranteed. Text GRADE to 323232 right now and get started for just $1. Text GRADE to 323232 now. Text GRADE to 323232.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pop Law. I am your host Desiree,
and I'm Tyrone, and we are not your attorneys.
Tyrone not sick anymore. He just still listen, trying to sound sexy on the mic. Y'all hear that?
Listen, that is my natural, smooth, sexy vocals. And y'all can be mad about it if you want.
Okay, Tyrone. I believe you. But you guys, we have a very, very special episode. We have brought back basically our third co-host for the Firefest episode.
I'm going to tell you, like, this is going to be special for not only the fact that if we're talking about one who's one of the originators of Fyre Festival, the legacy on the show with us, but he's also going to be our first return guest.
And he was our first guest in general.
Yeah. So our first return guest. So he's just breaking all types of Pop Law records today. but if you don't know, I'm going to give you his background before I say his name, just in case you can guess who it is. So this person is an entertainment and an insurance attorney. He has his own private practice representing artists and most importantly, also working for Afropunk Music Festival. He's also a public speaker and member of the Entertainment Committee for the New York City Bar Association. He also is a graduate of the Norman Adrian Wiggins School of Law at Campbell University and received his undergraduate from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. If you have not guessed who this is by now, you are not a real fan. We're so happy to welcome back Mr. Gerard Anthony.
Guess who's Bizak? Thank you. Happy to be here.
So we're actually so excited that he could be here because he stays booked and busy, apparently.
Right.
We'll get into what he's booked doing later in the show, but we're happy we can get him here in Brooklyn. He's in town. And we're going to talk about the gift that keeps on giving. And we're not talking about chlamydia.
Oh, Lord. No, we're definitely not talking about that. But maybe similar, Fyre Festival. So,
no pun intended.
Right. On our last episode, we gave you a little update and let you know that Mr. Billy McFarlane was facing 20 years in jail and he would be sentenced soon. Well, Billy got 6 years in federal prison, not the 20 that we thought.
Yeah, and I was not super happy about that.
What was your reaction, Gerard? Like, first reaction, because we text about Fire Festival offline all the time. So tell the people what you thought.
So my initial reaction was, one, I couldn't believe how just emotionally invested I was into someone else getting sentenced. Like, I literally had to step back and I'm like, why are you so invested into this? But I think it was because I know we had been, you know, sharing all the stories in the lead up time to it. And then I think the thing that was most surprising was the fact that in addition to him pleading guilty while he was out on bail, he also was behind another scam that he had to plead guilty for. And if you listen to the judge's statement during the sentencing, she says that I think that was like the first time in court that someone else had been arraigned on additional charges while they were out on bail.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was interesting that the judge brought up that, but then also at the same time gave him a pretty like light sentence for what he was looking at. But I will say that he has that, I think, a forfeiture of maybe like $20-something million in addition to probably the lawsuits that they're facing. So from a pure monetary standpoint, that's a pretty significant setback.
Yes. And I'm not sure if we got a clear picture of what his assets were when all of this laid out. Because to be quite honest, if he was committing all of this fraud, it's because most likely he didn't have the money to pay these bills. So it's like you have the forfeiture and you have all of like he had the civil lawsuit, the two people who sued him,
they won that suit.
They did. And that was for $5 million. I don't understand what
he's going to... Two of the many lawsuits that he's facing,
Yes.
I don't understand what he's going to pay those with, those judgments
with. He needs to go play the lotto like we need to go play the lotto and try to get this $1.6 million. You know?
With my mind set on getting up out of here, I was like, peace out, United States, because... Yeah. I'm going to take this money.
Yeah. But back to Billy, I definitely think, Gerard, what you're saying about the sentencing was very interesting. The judge is acknowledging that he is arraigned and charged with more fraud, and you still sentenced him only to 6 years. I didn't think that he would get the 20 based off of, you know, just the ways of the world.
Right.
But I was expecting at minimum 10. Right.
Yeah. And I think, too, it's that... It just seemed so egregious because it wasn't like he went out and committed different crimes in that time he was out on bail.
Right.
He pretty much went back and did the exact same thing that he was currently in jail for. And so, for the judge to recognize that and then not... there's a lot to be said about criminal justice reform and appropriate sentencing... And maximum, minimum, all that type of stuff. So it's not like we just want everyone who commits a crime to go to jail as long as possible. That's not it. But it also is like you need to keep things fair.
Right.
And you have to take in consideration someone's total history.
Right.
And we don't even need to go back farther than 2 years in time to get a good sense of his history.
Well, maybe the judge believed his attorneys that he was suffering from mental illness.
Listen.
You know, like we said last week, last episode, he suffered from bipolar disorders, mood disorders, ADHD, alcohol abuse. He had delusions
of grandeur.
He had trouble sleeping. Gerard, what were your thoughts when you heard all of these excuses given by his attorneys?
I think that was a Hail Mary. And they knew that they were really up against, had their back up against the wall. I thought that the prosecutors, you know, their response to that was basically, you know, why wasn't this mentioned at his initial, when he pled guilty the first time?
Gerard, it was a modern day insanity defense. It's like in this social climate, you can't say just, I'm insane. But what you can do is, you know, people are sensitive to mental disorders and disabilities. And so... For them to even, like, you know, break it down to all of these different categories of the things that affected him, it was like, wait a second. You have this exquisite expert map of who he is in his brain now that you sort of kind of forgot to lay out in the first instance when we went to trial.
Yeah.
That's what you said. It seemed like, what are you doing, sis? We're literally almost at like the sentencing phase of this. And now you want to talk about this?
Right.
So I absolutely agree with you. It was just like, how could you even think that this was going to be considered in a favorable light for you?
Yeah.
At this point of the, because
expound, Gerard, because clearly it was the Hail Mary worked, right?
Yeah, the Hail Mary definitely worked. And what I think most importantly from his sentencing is that you understand the power of a judge and how the judge can look at someone's life and determine whether or not, like, is this person redeemable? Can this person come back from this? Because I just use as an example, Mark Garagos, popular entertainment attorney, does a lot of criminal defense stuff like that. He's also representing Kaepernick. One of the attorneys at his firm filed one of the class action lawsuits against Fyre Festival. And so he was on the podcast, I believe, last week, and he was talking about how they were getting reaction to the sentence.
Yeah.
And their reaction was pretty much that, like, six is pretty tough. I mean, anytime is tough, right?
Yeah.
But that six is pretty tough. And I'm listening, thinking to myself, like, man, that seems pretty light. I'm surprised that that was their perspective. But I think also that maybe Billy and just.
Hey there. Ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
What he had achieved, even in, you know, this thing like blowing up,
yeah,
is that the judge was able to see that, you know, he's got family supporting him. He had all these friends and, you know, supporters in the courtroom, that maybe there's some value in his life as far as him being able to turn things around and be redeemable.
Yeah.
And so you get six, whereas maybe someone who may or may not look like Billy, maybe you're getting 15. Or maybe you're getting 20. So the judge has a lot of latitude in how they view a particular defendant, and how they can kind of alter the trajectory of what someone is facing. Even though, you know, like I said, we're all thinking 10 to 20.
Yeah.
Judge has the discretion to go under the 10.
And so, I think for me, if you have that value of life, okay, that the judge considered to maybe reduce the sentence, that would have all gone out the window when you did the same thing while you were 100% out on bail. So obviously reform is not going to help you. You have something wrong with you. Yes. I don't know if it's these disorders, but you know, something needs to happen. You need to do some time punishment. We know that you're probably never going to pay back this money. You go file for bankruptcy, something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But obviously there's something wrong that requires more than 6 years, because if somebody can get 20 years or life sentences for selling drugs and they're not scamming people, then you deserve to get a similar sentence or a harsher sentence, more than 6 years, because your behavior has not changed. You did that while you were out on bail.
And this is also pretty interesting. I found interesting so I knew someone was going to make some type of documentary or something about this. Yeah. So apparently they're doing a Hulu series about this. Her name is Jenna First. And she actually interviewed Billy over the course of all of this unfolding after Fyre Fest sort of didn't work out. And you actually sort of get a little bit of a glimpse into the person he was prior to this, and the fact that maybe some of this information was presented to the judge to factor into the decision for the sentencing.
Right.
So apparently Billy's actually really smart. Mm-hmm. And he was programming in middle school. And by the time he got to college, he had sold two internet companies. And he went to school debt-free. He went to Bucknell, if anyone knows where that is, in Pennsylvania. He went to Bucknell and pretty much paid for his own college because of selling these companies. And the documentarian said that the reason that he sort of may have thought that he could do this festival regardless of all of the obstacles that he ended up in encountering was that he hadn't experienced failure prior to this, nor had he experienced no, which, I mean, there's multiple levels of privilege there as a white male who comes from, I don't know his family's background, but apparently he had enough money from all of the business ventures and stuff to where he probably felt undefeatable once he got to the Fyre Festival phase. And so I think, again, I don't know how much of this was presented to the judge, but I think maybe his lack of prior criminal past, obviously, that had factored into it. But just the fact that it was like, oh, this kid is smart. He just bit off more than he can chew. You know, I think a lot of factors went into the sentencing for him. And regardless of how much time he gets or got, rather, first day of being in prison is going to affect him and it's going to change his life.
I hope so. But he should do more time. So when you, Gerard, when you saw the NYC VIP access thing, what did you think?
You know, he's this is what he does. You know, he's a scammer, and you know, I think this story is like a larger conversation about how we view white collar crime. Even you going into his background and saying that, oh, you know, he went to Bucknell and he like sold these companies. And that's what also what I got from the other podcast that I just was mentioning is that, you know, they're looking at the six like, oh, man, he's got a, like a heavy sentence. It's almost like, well, you look at the kid who, you know, has had, you know, all the advantages and the opportunities and he's done well. When that person messes up, you're just like, oh, well, this is just a blip on the screen. We just got to course correct and they'll get back to it. Whereas the person, you know, like someone like LeBron's background, you know, comes from single parent home, lived in the projects. Like the system treats them as like, oh, we expect you to mess up.
Yeah.
So if we're going to come down harder on you, it's not really as big of a deal because you were probably going to end up here and you're probably going to end up here anyway.
Exactly.
And I think that's kind of the difference in the perspective that we see. And like I said, I don't really know the background of the judge and if all that went into it. But
yeah,
my question would be, If Billy hadn't done, you know, hadn't been continuing that scam and, you know, committed those crimes while he was out on bail, does he still get six or does he get three now? Because I guess my question is, did you give him anything extra? Because, you know, you acknowledge that he committed these crimes while he was on bail after he had already, you know, pleaded guilty to the other stuff. Because it's like, okay, well, if, you know, he's getting six for that. And if he didn't do that, then does he get maybe four or five now?
Yeah, I think that's a great, great, great point to bring up. What would have happened to him if he didn't have that other scam? And I'm curious to see, you know, of course, this is going to be the gift that keeps on giving. We'll follow once he's released.
I'm sure
his life won't be hard like the rest of, you know, people who don't look like him once they get out of jail and are convicted felons. Like you said, he is smart enough and has a connection to go on ahead and make different types of companies and do different types of things.
I can definitely see the fail up coming. Like how people referencing like, oh, this person failed up because the fact that they're even doing that documentary. And like you see the interest in it. I could totally see him coming out and then people wanting to talk about the festival, his experience, like everything that he went through. Everyone doesn't get afforded that opportunity.
I'm sure they'll probably get some life rights on this and he'll get some money from that. And
I think there will be an actual Fyre Festival after all said and done, to be honest.
We go start Fyre Festival. We have the means. We have the resource. We have the knowledge.
To be clear, though, and maybe this, I don't know what the next, if this is a segue or not, but like Ja Rule talked about it when he was on the podcast for Noriega. And he was like, the idea behind it was fantastic. And I agree. The idea behind it, like even seeing the video, I was like, oh man, this is great. The promotional video. So I completely got what they were going for. And the fact that people were willing to shell out thousands of dollars to go, I think it shows that other people got it too. And there was value behind it. It was just the execution was horrible.
We've gotten to this, like, this moment and I guess culture and popular culture where festivals really are centerpieces for how people, like, they determine their social life at this point. Like, people build their whole life around going to Coachella socially. Mm-hmm. And so they will make sure that they have their $5,000 put away for Coachella or whatever the big festival is that they don't want to go to. Yeah. And so I think there is room for, like, entry into this market if you know how to do it correctly, because you know, we just saw, like, Afropunk. Afropunk wasn't really a thing, like, 6-7 years ago. It was, like, you know, very New York City regional. But, like, Afropunk is, like, a destination event. People travel to come to this now. And that is what a lot of the festivals are building into now, is because there's a market to, you know, for live music, because they become, think, these big cultural events where you have multiple artists, and a lot of times there's a theme, so it's like similar types of artists that you like, and you're paying like a couple $100 for your weekend,
but thousands pass. I definitely wanted to be luxury what Firefest was trying to do. And I think, Jarai, you brought up a good point about the Ja Rule interview. One thing I found interesting, he said he's not ashamed of it because it's his idea, but you know, he said never give somebody the keys to your car. His idea, we know idea is not necessarily copyrightable, but, you know, he had this great idea and no one knew it was his idea until something went wrong. And then it's like, bring Ja Rule into it. Ja Rule has messed up this thing. I think in the forefront, when Firefest first went downhill, we saw Ja Rule. We didn't really see Billy McFarlane until you start digging deeper into the investigation and all the money that was taken. Then you start seeing Billy. So. I don't know. Does anyone have an update or any idea like where Ja Rule stands now? I know he was dismissed from a lot of lawsuits.
He was dismissed from a couple of. He's not part of the criminal complaint. Mm-hmm. He was dismissed from a couple of the lawsuits. I'm not sure if he was dismissed from all of them. I'm sure he would. He would like to be, but there may be some other ones out there where he's still on the hook. And you know, obviously, you know, with those type of lawsuits, they're going for the deepest pockets. Anyone else who was potentially involved,
And it
may be difficult to get out of all of those.
It's interesting because I don't even think that, and the people who've been covering, you know, Billy McFarlane's trial have really even mentioned Ja Rule in the same article.
I haven't seen him in the publication. Yeah.
Like, it's always been a separate sort of, like, someone has to intentionally go and follow up on Ja Rule to see, like, what's the disposition of any legal actions taken against him. So I really think, like, it may have just been straight up his idea. Right. And they had a chance encounter and he met up with him, was like, I want to do this. And Billy was probably like, I can make it happen.
I can make it happen. I got this money. And, you know, kind of probably sold him a dream on it.
Which I completely understand, because usually that's like, there's someone who's more the creative, maybe the type B person. And then there's someone who's the type A, who's usually more the person like, oh, we can execute. Here's the plan. Here's how we get it done. So I understand how the marriage would come together.
Right.
And but you have to sleep on Ja Rule. Ja Rule, he has industry connections. Yeah. So I don't want to say like Ja Rule didn't bring anything to the equation, because I don't think Billy even had any foray into the entertainment world prior to this. So Ja Rule probably did have the connections for like managers and agents and stuff.
Well, I'm going to say right now, bring Ja Rule to Afropunk, Jerome. Because, you know, Ja Rule, he has timeless music. You know, hear Living It Up. You be having a good old time. He has these classics. I don't know. That just made me think of the show with Ashanti. It was canceled. Because they only
coming back too.
Well, not really, because this show was just canceled. They'd only sold 25 tickets.
Oh, but we do.
She has classic music. So, yes, Ja Rule, Ashanti. I'm putting it out there. Y'all need to be at Afropunk. You know,
I definitely have a soft spot for Ja Rule, because I think he has one of the more interesting just like career arcs in just stories and music, because having explained to people who are probably like younger than us, like how big he was and just, you know, his whole camp.
Yeah.
And Irv and Ashanti just absolutely dominating the radio. Mm-hmm. But
it was Jay-Z and Beyonce. They weren't together, but like that's the effect they had on.
Yeah, they were huge. And then just post 50 Cent, and then just the complete kind of like obliteration of a lot of his legacy, I think kind of gets, and he's also based, I mean, the Fyre Festival didn't help. but he's also kind of become a little bit of a punchline.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I mean, like I said, the fire, he was a punchline before fire, but this certainly didn't help. But I just think that a lot kind of gets lost in that, man. This guy has like hits for days.
Oh, and also, like I said, he had the connections mm-hmm. for like the agents and probably yeah. managers and stuff, but maybe also to some of these influencers that got involved as well. Like, right. you know, the big Jenners and stuff. He probably ran in that circle
models.
And was able to, you know, get Billy a little bit more social cachet
yeah.
than he had if Billy yeah. had tried to go into those talks to bring them on board beforehand. And right. that is one, I guess, loose end that I would like to see someone follow up on, because I'm not an entertainment reporter like that.
Right.
But, you know, there was that whole... the influencers and like potential FTC violations
promoting
and
them.
Promotions yeah. and how much did any of those people and the Jenners and whoever did they know about right. none of this stuff being real, because apparently they did fly down to the Bahamas and
they shot
videos and stuff, and it's like, did you actually see the pieces of the festival put together yeah. or like, you know,
they probably had them off somewhere else making it look really
exactly.
nice.
So,
and the artists who had shipped their equipment and stuff out there and right. instruments. I remember that being an issue as well. So they probably had that covered by insurance.
Yeah.
If it was Lloyds of London, I don't know if they got the payout.
Usually,
we talk about them
usually
all the time.
The musical equipment or mm-hmm. like the back line is going to be covered one way or the other.
Yeah.
So either the promoter is providing those things and is covered under their policy, or the artist is shipping their stuff
mm-hmm.
and they have a policy that's going to cover their equipment as well. To the promoters, I mean, to the influencers,
yeah.
the social media influencers, I'm pretty sure that as soon as they saw this thing going belly up, whoever their representation was, or, you know, whether it's their attorney or manager
mm-hmm.
is making it very clear that like they're not involved in the planning of
yeah.
this mm-hmm. because, and I think that was the way to distinguish it. And I'm sure that was pretty much Ja Rule's argument at the same way. It was at the same time. It's like, you know, I'm part of the creative side of this
yeah.
and the idea behind it, but not actual like the engine behind it
mm-hmm.
as far as like, you know, raising money and capital and things of that nature. So I'm sure immediately they were trying to distinguish themselves. But it's a learning lesson to everyone that you really have to do your due diligence before you're going to get out there and really promote anything.
And then I guess the last piece of all of this is for the people who paid money to go to this event that sort of fell apart
yeah.
while they were there.
Yeah.
Like, not only are they getting their money back for the tickets, but are they being reimbursed for like, I remember there was the one story about the people who were like stuck on the island
right.
on the plane
yeah.
and they just like couldn't leave.
Yeah.
So there, you know, there was the one civil lawsuit with the two festival goers and
right.
they were covered. But like,
when something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludacris.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
I'm sure that doesn't cover
no,
for
everyone.
All of the
everyone
other
else, yeah.
thousands
travel
of
expenses.
People and travel expenses. So
right.
this was just like a cluster in all regards, to be quite
yeah.
honest. And I think it's great that we got the person who was
yeah.
the architect and he's sort of being held accountable.
Yeah.
But there's still some loose ends out there that I think people still need to be made whole
right.
for
yeah.
what went down.
So I think there will be continuous updates. Probably not as many, but... You know, we need to be in this documentary. So we go hit up the Jenner, all three of us.
I would love to speak to the attorney, because I was
yeah.
Just through networking. I forget, pretty sure it was a guy. I forget his name. But someone told me, she was like, "Oh, you know, you're in the space. I actually know such and such attorney." And she goes, "Actually, he was the attorney that dealt with the whole Fyre Festival. And I would just love to know from a legal perspective
yeah.
mm-hmm.
what was going through his mind as he was just seeing this thing like
unfold.
Fall apart. Because
yeah.
usually the attorney has like a pretty good front row seat of like what's going on.
Because yeah, it's all contract based. So
exactly.
nothing's really moving forward without these contracts. So
right.
who checks this contract?
Bingo.
Well, you know, earlier we spoke about the Fyre Festival being Ja Rule's idea and the name, and we brought up Coachella a little bit. So I wanted to bring up this Coachella trademark lawsuit. I think it's a little bit interesting, and we're in this festival type space. So in August 2017, the founders of Coachella sued the Filmchella founder, Trevor Sims, claiming that it has exclusive use of the term Chella for festivals, even though the word Chella is the name where Coachella is, Coachella Valley.
Yeah, it's an actual place.
So last fall, the court denied Coachella's motion for summary judgment on the issue of trademark infringement liability and entered a preliminary injunction that barred Sims from using Filmchella or Filmchella. I thought that was pretty interesting since it's based off of the area, the name, but...
Yeah, because, you know, when something is a little bit more generic, this is harkening back to trademark episodes, but right. Like usually it has to have some type of secondary meaning for it to for you to exclusively be able to use something that is just generic like that in a location. Like you can't trademark the name necessarily Chicago unless right. there's a secondary meaning for a specific use or purpose. So
when you hear Filmchella Dry, do you think that your first thought was it related to Coachella to you? Did you think it was?
Yeah, it would. Mm-hmm. And you know, the foundation of trademark law is likelihood of confusion.
Right.
We want consumers to be able to understand that, you know, when I see this logo, when I hear this name, this is going to be the source for it. Mm-hmm. And so there's not any confusion. And I think Coachella, the music festival,
right. yeah.
being as big as it is, I think they have a lot of cachet in that name. They built a lot of brand recognition
right.
in that name. And film, obviously, is still in the same realm of entertainment. So
yeah.
it's not inconceivable to think that
that
Filmchella could be associated with Coachella, the music festival.
Yeah, and like you said, it's about that likelihood of confusion
right.
and identifying the source. And if people can't figure out
yeah.
where the source of a product or a service is coming from and they start to get confused, that's when you need to be worried about who has the mark in use. And then
right.
subsequently, if someone has registered that mark, which I am sure Coachella has registered this mark.
Did the founder of Filmchella say why he chose that name?
He didn't, but I'm pretty sure it was based off of Coachella. Coachella has an established name, you know, kind of
exactly.
piggyback on the same thing. And right. I think both of you guys are right on point with the likelihood of confusion argument, because the judge, that was the reasoning for denying the motion for summary judgment. It was interesting because the judge said a reasonable jury could find that there was no likelihood of confusion. But, you know, the layperson, when I hear it, I think that it's plausible.
Yeah, that was interesting.
That was very interesting.
Because of the arguments that we just talked about.
Yeah,
but, you know, judges are people too. And right. so sometimes their decisions are limited by not just their knowledge of the law, but their knowledge of popular culture.
Yeah, and
so
sometimes they might not have it.
There's a disconnect there maybe to be like, oh, I don't see how these could be confused based off of the information.
So the judge actually went on to say that the festivals are different from one another and there is no clear evidence that the festivals do or will compete directly with each other. I don't know, though. I mean, I've been to a film festival. I used to work at a film festival. And so I think... You know, you have music there. You have players. You might have some celebrities who are in film and in music. So I think it kind of, like you said, Gerard, intertwines. What do you think about the judge saying that, you know, they're different?
Yeah, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a stretch for me. Because like I said, film and music, they kind of go together
mm-hmm.
hand in hand. And the fact that, you know, just hearing Chella,
yeah,
9 times out of 10, I think the general public is going to think about Coachella.
Mm-hmm.
And again, but like you said, I don't know the background of the judge. I don't know if this judge is more like how much they know about, you know, current climate and music
mm-hmm.
and how big festival culture is, particularly Coachella. So that might have impacted his decision as well, because it's different if you're just looking at it on paper and then also like, say you have a daughter that goes to Coachella.
Right.
And so like now, so the judge may be coming, like literally just looking at what he's seeing on paper. So he may not have the full context of how big the name is. So
what about, okay, this is just me you know, giving you hypotheticals at this point. If there was an organization out there and they were trying to start a film festival about black hair,
yeah,
and what if they called it like
Afro Pump,
Afro Fest, Afro Film Fest,
yeah,
like, you know, Afro something pig. Playing off the word,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, playing off the word Afro at the beginning, and then yeah. putting, you know, the name of the whatever they're trying to do to demarcate the difference right after it.
Yeah,
would you be like, I don't know, like that's are you?
It would be
with
interesting
it?
Because obviously, like, you know, I don't think anyone has Afro,
yeah,
just like has the right to just use Afro
in
but,
combination though, like, you know, trying to
what if it was Afro pick Afro. I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, okay, so what if it, because you know there's just
but what would they be, but it would be a hair, but it's like a hair, it's like a hair,
but so if they're what if they're like the actual logo, the mark, the visual version of the mark, not just right. the word mark.
Right.
What if it was like sort of the same lettering,
yeah,
and like the same colors,
yeah,
and they just, I don't know, maybe they crossed out the U and the N, and they put like a I and a
C. See, that at that point, that's probably too close. And I know the trademark office has a number of factors that they look at. So they look at obviously how something, the word just on paper, the word or the logo, how it sounds, the spelling, the font. So once you start going through those number of factors, if you know you're checking them off, I think you're probably going to be get too close. In addition to, you know, what type of field you're in. So if you're talking about it's another music festival that's doing that, that's pretty easy.
What
you're
if it's like about, again? What my
if it's
scenario.
A film? Film is
it's
probably going to be
it's
pretty
a film,
close.
Black film festival around like hair or something.
Right. So. A combination of Curl Fest and Afropunk mixed together.
Yeah.
All these musical performances, you have hair vendors, you have all the same, those are the same target audiences for both of us.
See, I think that would be, I think that would be too close. And I think that particularly like looking at the font and like, you know, the logo and like that's pretty close. I think that's, I think at that point, that's probably too close to what I think Afropunk would be is an established mark. And I have actually seen some other people try to like, piggyback. It's usually smaller stuff, and it usually happens around the Brooklyn Festival, where people may have some type of like Afro something else. But it's pretty clear that they're trying to take a little bit of steam off of the festival. And usually, there's not any pushback.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would definitely say about trademarks, and I think this is probably the struggle between like lawyers who probably fall more on like type A, and creatives who probably fall more to a type B.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people bring application to you for certain names and it's like
you
gotta have a more distinct name, like
yes.
I'm just gonna throw out an example that I can think of in the past, like New Vision.
Yeah,
come on, like that is how, like you cannot get more simple than it. So the names really do need to be distinct, your logo needs to be distinct, and the examples that y'all are using, I think sometimes the reason why people even pick those names that are close is because if you're being honest, you're trying to take a little bit of steam off of the, you know, from Coachella, you want that association, but you don't want them to come back and basically be like, hey, you can't use that mark because it's too close to what we've already, what we already had.
Yeah.
All right. So in the Famchella and Coachella situation, they were supposed to go to trial within this month, but they reached a settlement. And of course, we know settlements are private. But
some money changed hands.
Exactly. Sam's, he agreed not to use Famchella for his festival, and he will transfer the domain name to Coachella. So maybe Coachella will get in the film space now.
Which is interesting, the last portion, the domain name to Coachella, because I didn't realize this, but domain names are governed by like a different set of rules than like a regular trademark.
Correct.
Right.
And even though like there's used some trademark principles,
yeah,
there's really, it's like I was just researching something recently and I was just like, oh, this is so interesting. So,
but that guy might actually, he, I mean, that's probably a come up for him though, because if all he did was file the trademark and then he has this back and forth with Coachella. But then the judge basically, and I guess the trademark office basically backs him up And then he has to settle. Uh-huh. Now all he has to do is just, okay, well, I can still do my film festival. I just have to name it something else.
He changed the name, and I purposely did not put the name in here because we're not giving that much free promo. So y'all got a little bit of trademark law on that. So we had Afropunk Brooklyn. We had Afropunk
Atlanta.
Did Paris happen yet?
Paris has happened and London has happened already too.
Okay, so Joburg is what's left for the year.
Joburg is left. I believe the final announcement should be coming in the next week as far as like the actual lineup. But I'm very excited about it. And I was just thinking about you guys talking about how some of these festivals have become these kind of like culture points.
Yeah.
And I was at an event on Thursday night, and I ended up meeting two people who were from Cape Town.
Nice.
And I went up and I just started talking to them, and I just mentioned Afropunk, and I could just see their eyes just like light up. And it was this touch point for me to talk about just my last trip to South Africa in general and all these different things. But, you know, I don't know if you get that. I don't know if every festival has that same type of like culture, like gravitas to it.
Like connecting people.
Like connecting people like that. And Afropunk definitely has. And it was the same when I went to the Paris Festival 2 years ago. It was the same way, like meeting people over there. And it was like you end up building these connections with people from like North Africa, South Africa, like all these different places. And again, it's just coming around this festival, but you're learning about all this different stuff basically from what's essentially like a music festival.
Yeah.
But it has these like antennas in all these different other areas.
People are very connected to culture and learning about the culture that was lost and just becoming one and making this a safe place for all of us people of color. So with that, please vote.
Well, and also before we talk about like voting straight up, is there any plans to potentially incorporate, well, I guess we're sort of at the end of it, but maybe in future festival Afropunks to incorporate like voter registration?
Actually, there was in 2016, and there was stuff last year. I don't remember if there, but they actually do a lot of political engagement.
It's really big, so you know, I've been to Afropunk several times, but sometimes you don't see everything that's going on at the festival. So
It's usually along activism row. Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of different tents, so there usually is someone registering people to vote. And then also you get some engagement from some of the politicians in the city. Like I think de Blasio came and spoke.
Right.
Tish James has come and spoke as well too. So
she's running for election for
attorney general.
General.
Yeah.
Yes. So that for those who are in New York State elections are coming up.
And remember, you can actually look at a sample ballot, which I'm almost ashamed to admit I did for the first time for our upcoming election, because you get in there and then like, you know, the people at the top of the ballot and then down people like all the judges. Yeah. So I actually have gone and looked at like what a sample ballot is, just so I can know something about some of the
other people.
Right.
And it's actually, that's such a good point, because I didn't know this until I moved here. I don't know if you voted in Desiree or Gerard, you definitely have, but voting here in New York, they have something that's very unique and weird in that you could have a candidate running for a position for multiple parties. And so you have to remember to mark it like in the appropriate party as well. You can vote for a candidate in whatever party,
right,
but you can see a candidate's name appear several times under multiple parties. That is very unique.
That is.
Usually you run with a single party.
Would it be like Democrat or like Working Families or something? Yes, I
didn't
know.
And so just again, like Gerard said, you can go look at a sample ballot in your state and get a good sense, because it could be a little stressful because you sort of feel like, okay, these are the main people, senator, whatever, governor.
Right.
And then you get down to like your like alderman, or you get down to who's going to represent
city
your
council,
borough, your county,
school board.
Those are things that you don't have to do like a ton of research to get a good sense of like, okay, this person is completely against the things that I stand for.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just.
And those positions are probably actually affect most Americans on a daily basis. Way more than what's at the top of the ballot, 100%.
That is so correct. The local elections are affecting your day-to-day life more than probably the presidential elections, if we're going to be quiet. And that's not to say don't vote in the presidential election. Please don't take it as that. Right. What I'm saying is that it should be just as important to you across the board, but especially so because the people in your community are affected most by the people who are
I'm going to be honest, man. I just read this Billboard article with J. Cole. My mom's going to be, she's going to be mad when she hears this, but I was a little, he said he didn't vote in 2016. And I know it was another tweet. People that didn't. I was a little disappointed in that just because I know, one, just how smart he is.
Yeah.
And then two, like, I think we put so much emphasis on just like the Trump versus Hillary. Yeah. And you ignore all the other like the representatives, down the down ballot stuff. And I'm just like, even if you weren't feeling that race or like you weren't comfortable voting for someone there, I think all the other down ballot stuff is extremely important.
Oh my God, Florida. Florida, they have a huge initiative to bring back voting rights for people who have been convicted of felonies and have served their time.
Yep.
And so they can vote again. Right now, they cannot vote again. But that's exactly, it's an example across, sometimes you're not voting on politicians or people to represent you. Sometimes you're just voting on initiatives like the legalization of weed.
Also true. I don't know if that's going to be on the, I don't know if that's on the ballot for New York City.
Yeah.
It's not. I'm just saying sometimes that is the case. You're voting on things more than just who do you want in the Senate. Sometimes it's like cannabis legalization. And so it's like, just remember that. Go look at your ballot.
Get that sample on ballot.
There's probably bound to be at least one thing you care about on there. Right. So,
and then with cannabis legalization, y'all have to continue to follow to make them push bills to free people who are in jail for marijuana crimes. Yep. So California is doing a really great job at that. And that's my home state and where I'm registered to vote. So make sure y'all vote. But before we get out of here, I just want to do one last update. Somebody that's close to my heart. We have an update on the Tupac Shakur estate. So,
it's like, do you remember that episode? That
was y'all better listen to that Tupac episode.
It was literally just called the Tupac episode.
I let my parents hear that and I was cursing and I was passionate, but you know what? They were like, okay, they appreciate it because they down with Pac too.
So, before her untimely death, Afeena Shakur, you know, Tupac's mom, was fighting for her son, the late and great Tupac Shakur. In 2013, Afeena was the administrator of Tupac's estate and sued Entertainment One for unpaid royalties.
Limba Chicken Chamin, Retro, aka Big Wara.
Yo, it's Big Fred, aka the Dituzawadi Podcast.
Kiki Tubafetu, and we are the Sobering Podcast.
Tune in to us every second Wednesday for fire conversations and interviews about South African music, sneakers, and street culture.
Check us out on the Revolt Podcast Network.
Shout out to our moms.
And to get a bunch of unreleased master recordings her son had made.
Entertainment One is a record label that has an exclusive distribution deal with Suge Knight's Death Row Records. And that is the label that Tupac was signed to. I did some research on Entertainment One today. It was a lot of surprising things that I was like, you know what? For safety purposes, let me not dive into them. Yeah, but we should talk about this offline. Yes,
yes. It's a large company.
So even though Afeena Shakur passed away, the lawsuit continued and the Shakur estate finally got a victory.
So just this week, the estate of Tupac Shakur won the rights and ownership to some of his masters. So not quite all of them, but enough to make a difference.
Yeah, so this is huge and huge for all of us Tupac fans out there. You can anticipate a new album in the future. And, you know, some of us represent artists. So owning your masters is so important. And the conspiracy theorists and a lot of people say this is why people like Michael Jackson, Prince, and Tupac end up dying because they were fighting for their masters around the time of their death. So
It is important. It cannot be stressed enough. And what I've been noticing in some of the recording and just kind of music agreements I've been seeing is because so many of these brands are now content heavy, which includes the music, they're kind of positioning a couple of these deals where they're trying to acquire the masters to a lot of the music. And I've had to tell some people flat out, I'm like, listen, you got to understand, this is huge. You know, you may be thinking like this song or like this album is not as important today, but literally this is, masters are the thing that you leave to your kids or your offspring, like, you know, your heirs.
That's your estate.
Your estate. That's a large part of your estate. And I think we've kind of seen, you know, with the untimely deaths of a couple people like Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously, like Prince, you know, that's those masters are worth a lot of money. And I can only imagine Tupac's as well, too. So,
you know what I'm surprised with, though? Speaking of people trying to get back their masters, I'm not going to say his name because he's irked my soul to the nth degree. But I'm just going to call him Mr. Kardashian.
I knew it.
Kardashian West. I didn't realize that he didn't own his masters.
Yeah, he went on a rant earlier this week.
Yeah, he's trying to buy them back. Yeah.
From Sony ATV.
I was sort of shocked to hear that.
He might have signed, because I didn't see the story, but was that a publishing? Does a publishing deal?
Publishing deal where he signed over his master.
So he signed it away.
Yeah, so I was first, even as someone who you think is sort of, no, regardless of what you think, he is very creative. He's leads above a lot of people in the industry right now in terms of his music creativity.
Right.
For him to feel so strongly about all of his music and passionate about it, for him not to have his master's,
but I think that's a lack of education in the beginning and not having the right people or people who know. You know, when you're new in the industry, you're trying to get in, you see this check that you'll get up front and you don't really know. So, you know, old Kanye probably didn't know.
Sony ATV is a big publishing company, so that may have been a deal where, you know, he sold those rights to them and now he's trying to reacquire, which is a big thing too, is that even if you're going to sign them away, always being able to have the right revert back to you at some point is huge.
Yeah.
All right. So that is it for us. Thank you, Gerard, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
I just want y'all to pay attention to the roles for you Instagram, because, you know, we can't leave out of here without saying something about Beyonce.
So, you know, I was doing a little research and did you see the most recent post? This is like an actual Instagram account we're talking about.
Yes.
It looks like Kelly.
You know, people were saying it might be Kelly and she's, you know, Beyonce is kind of promoting it. I'm gonna be disappointed if that's what it is, but I love you, Kelly girl. Like,
you know, it could be more like Beyonce is like the executive producer or something of it. You know,
maybe she signed to Parkwood now or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's flexing. But anyway, pay attention because I think Kelly has new music coming
out. Yeah, she does.
Solange has new music coming out.
Beyonce better have a solo album coming out.
If she does, it won't be till next year. So don't get your hopes up. And you know what? I'm fine with her taking her time because I want this next thing to be like, if you don't give her every Grammy and every category, you're going to look crazy.
She needs a Tony. She needs everything.
You can't use that as a stat, though. We got to get to a place where it's like, we appreciate the Grammys.
That's what I'm saying.
But we shouldn't use them as a barometer.
My point is that I want it to be so just undeniable.
Yeah.
Such a force of culture and work. And
I mean, the last one was undeniable.
And then I wanted to not show up to the Grammys. That's what I was.
She not. Okay. They played her and Jay nominated him for eight and didn't give him.
I don't want her to show up until they give her a proper due, because you can't have the people leading the culture showing up.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna say like shucking and jiving, but like having them perform so you can get viewers and not respecting the thing that has them in the room, which is the culture that they created.
Right.
And I just feel like we're at the place where people don't even have to go to the Grammys anymore. Like,
Drake giving them out on his Instagram.
And like, you know, I have a history with the Grammys and I support what they stand for and their mission, but I also know they have work to do and the work is not done, nor is it close to being
all right. So we're putting our hat in to join the Grammy board.
Absolutely.
As well.
Neil, you got my number.
So with that said, let Gerard tell you guys what he has been up to.
What's going on?
With you?
What's coming up for you?
what's coming up.
Besides like fall and pumpkin patches and going sweaters.
Working on the Johannesburg Festival right now.
Right. Okay.
As you can imagine, like an international festival always has a little extra wrinkles to it as opposed to like Brooklyn and Atlanta.
Yes.
Because of the logistics. But it's been going well, and I'm actually, one thing that I like about the festival is like getting the chance the second time around to like, even what can we improve on the last time that we did it. So like I said, it was, you know, the first one was a year ago, or a little under a year ago. So looking forward to seeing how we build on that, and then actually attending the festival too as well. So me and my wife will be going to the Johannesburg Festival. Actually bringing some friends this time too. I know Desiree was in Kenya last time, but bringing some friends this time as well. So very much looking forward to that. And also speaking at Syracuse at the, how do we pronounce it?
Brandeir.
Their music school, which is pretty cool, because like I always see their school being promoted in Billboard magazine, so I'm excited. And the fact that it's part of the school that my wife went to, Newhouse.
Nice.
That's I got a little one up there. So I'm excited about that.
All right, so we have a lot of great updates from Gerard.
I have to keep mentioning it because we worked so hard to get to this point. You should be listening to this on Spotify, but if you are not, we are available on Spotify. Actually, listen to it wherever you can, but not to say listen to it wherever you want to listen to podcasts. But I just want to say we're available on Spotify. But as usual, we are also still available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. I think they have a newish podcast app that they rolled out last summer. We are on Stitcher, TuneIn, Pocket Cast. We're all over the place, and we're just growing and doing big tings, as what did I say? Big tings, Barbie tings. Nah, I'm not a Barbie.
Yep, yes he is. All right, and so remember, we are not your attorneys.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again, because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.